Hello, this is Regina, and I'm here for the Guiding Light. I'm going to be sharing from Bernadette Roberts' book, What is the Self? And if you want to try and read along, but of course I'll be skipping around a bit. I'm going to begin with her definition of terms, which starts on page 3, but there's no number on the page. But of course it's just before page 4, which does have a number. If you were there live for this teaching in the sanctuary and it sounds a little different, it's because it is different. The recording was lost, and so I am re-recording it, which means I get to go through this again, which is really good. I'm very happy about that. So I'm just going to begin reading. I want to say that the first sentence is really important. No one knows the true nature of self. And I want to point out that her words are a little different. When she says the true nature of self, she's talking about the little s self. In other words, she's saying we do not know what the little s self is until, let's listen to the rest of the sentence. No one knows the true nature of self as long as he is living it. Or is it? The true nature of self can be disclosed only when it falls away and becomes known in retrospect by its absence or what was. So what she's saying is we don't actually know what the false self is. Now, she's not referring to mental chatter. Because, of course, we know what mental chatter is. Or even false beliefs, because we can identify those and know what those are. What she's really referring to is that sense of self, that sense that I exist, that sense that I am. Nisargadatta Maharaj would call it the I am. You know, we all have this sense of self. We have this sense of existence. But she's saying we can't really put our finger on it. We can't really say what it is while we're in it. You know, in other words, if I was to give us each an assignment to before next Sunday to investigate this sense that I exist and to write down what it is, if we were to write anything, she's saying that we would be mistaken. Because the only way to know this sense of existence is in retrospect after it falls away. Then we can see what it is. And that's not an unusual concept. We've all experienced something similar. You know, we've experienced going through a situation in our lives, and while we were in it, we couldn't see it clearly. We didn't understand what was happening. But afterwards, when we look back on it, after it's complete and we look back on it, then we have some understanding in hindsight, right? I think we say hindsight is 20/20, right? In hindsight, you have perfect view. Well, she's kind of saying the same thing here, that once this sense of self falls away, then we know what the sense of self was. But while we still have this sense of self, we don't know what it is. So again, she says, no one knows the true nature of self as long as he is living it, or is it. The true nature of self can be disclosed only when it falls away and becomes known in retrospect by its absence or what was. As it turns out, self is first and foremost an unconscious experience and only secondary a conscious experience. So we have a conscious experience of ourself, of our sense of self. You know, for example, if we aren't at all awakened or enlightened, our conscious experience of the self is the ego self. You know, I could, for example, tell you who Regina is, what her story is, where she came from, what she values, what she doesn't like, what she wants to avoid, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, any one of us could talk forever about our personal self. And that's all conscious. And if we happen to be awakened to the unitive experience, that unitive experience is also conscious. You know, there's a conscious realization that I am one with everything. But she's saying there's also a sense of self that isn't conscious to us. And it's that sense of self that isn't conscious to us that we won't know or understand until it falls away. In its absence, we'll know it or understand it, but not while it's an ongoing, unconscious sense of self. So as it turns out, self is first and foremost an unconscious experience. See, that sense of self is an unconscious experience primarily. Self is first and foremost an unconscious experience and only secondarily a conscious experience. Thus, the self we know is the conscious self, right? We know what we are conscious of. And the self we do not know is the unconscious self. Together, these constitute the entire human dimension of knowing, feeling, and experiencing. In essence, self is what it means to be human. And she's going to talk a lot more about this. So that's something else we want to kind of hold on to in our minds while we're listening tonight. Self is what it means to be human. She continues, as a dynamic but non-eternal experience, it is in passage, a passage that as our life. So she's saying self is a dynamic experience, dynamic meaning it's always changing. It's a non-eternal experience, and it's always passing. And that constant passing of experience, that's what we refer to as our life. Right? The constant passing of experience is what we refer to as our life. She says, with the falling away of self, it becomes possible to get an overview of this passage along with its major milestones. From this particular perspective, we will be discussing the experience that we consciously know as self, but unconsciously cannot recognize until it's gone. So once the self falls away, you can look back on that passage of experience that we called life. You can see the major milestones that you hit in that passing experience. And also you can begin to, you can understand the unconscious sense of self that you weren't aware of in that passing. In other words, she's saying it's not until you awaken from consciousness, awaken from what I call the second principle of God, that you can have a full understanding of what consciousness was. In fact, later on the page, she's going to say that the self and consciousness are the same thing. So she's not merely talking about the ego, right? We've already seen that Bernadette Roberts talks about two movements of awakening. First, there's the falling away of the ego, the personal sense of self. And that's when you awaken to the unitive experience. But then there's a falling away of that sense of self, consciousness. And that's when you awaken to the first principle of God, or awaken to the absolute. And she's saying it's not until we awaken to the absolute that we really understand what consciousness was, or what that sense of self was that is consciousness. She says, before we begin, however, it should be pointed out that beyond the human dimension of knowing and experiencing lie other dimensions of existence. Animal, plant, mineral, elemental, as well as the dimension of ultimate truth, the divine, the absolute, God, or whatever we wish to call the Alpha and Omega of all possible levels of existence. So she's just pointing out that the human is only one type of existence, and she'll make a lot more points about this as we go forward. She says, what keeps human beings locked within the centrality of their own experience is self or consciousness. Now that's an important sentence. Let me read that again. What keeps human beings locked within the centrality of their own experience is self or consciousness. So, I think A Course in Miracles would call this the hero of the dream. Each and every one of us is the hero of our own dream. You know, when we look at the world, we interpret the world through our sense of self. Like last night, I was in a conversation with someone, and I noticed that whenever I said anything, he referred it to an experience he had. I'd say something, I was doing a spiritual teaching, but then he'd refer it always to himself. That's what she's referring to as what keeps us locked in being human. Everything is about me, right? I interpret my spouse through me, you know, like how he treats me, how much attention he gives me. I interpret my children through me, what I think they should accomplish, how they treat me, right? How often they see me or call me. You know, I interpret the news through me, how I think the world should be. You know, so everything is interpreted through me. And she says that self-referencing mechanism is what makes us the sense of self. It is consciousness. She says, what keeps human beings locked within the centrality, right, the center of, within the centrality of their own experience is self or consciousness. While man knows about other dimensions of existence, he cannot experience these dimensions because consciousness precludes his doing so. So I know about plants, I know about animals, I know about minerals, but I don't know what it's like to be a plant or to be, well, in my case, I did get the experience of being an apple once. But those of you who have heard me talk about when my isness shifted into the apple, you know, when I describe that experience, I often say there was nothing human there, right? There was absolutely nothing human there. And so what she's saying is because humans interpret everything through me, I interpret the purpose of an apple through me. You know, being a human, the purpose of an apple is to eat or to make apple pie or apple fritters, right? I determine the purpose of plants through me. They're to make my home look beautiful. They're to make me feel proud as a person with a green thumb that can grow lovely plants. You know, I interpret animals through me. You know, like gophers, not so great because they tear up my lawn, right? So I don't know what it's like. I don't know what it feels like to be a gopher, to be a plant. Most people don't know what it feels like to be an apple. I have no understanding of that existence, and I interpret that existence through me. This constant self-referencing is the sense of self that keeps us locked in the position of human. She says, thus, no one, for example, can know the immediate experience of a bird or a lump of sugar. In order to be a bird or a lump of sugar, there could be no human experience. Just like when I was in the apple. You know, there was absolutely nothing human there. When my isness was in the apple, there was nothing human there. That's why there was an experience of the apple. If there had been something human there, it would have been interpretive based on this self-referencing experience of being human. consciousness then precludes, and again, she's referring to consciousness here as this centrality of my experience, being the center of my experience. That's what she's defining consciousness as. And she's saying, because of that, consciousness then precludes the experience of other dimensions of existence, and it does so in order to make the human experience possible. So I can't know what it's like to be a zebra. However, the reason this consciousness is here is so we can have the human experience. This consciousness, this self-referencing, this centrality of my experience is what it is to be human. Consciousness then precludes the experience of other dimensions of existence, and it does so in order to make the human experience possible. If consciousness had not come into existence, the limit of experience would be that of the animal. If the animal or purely sensory experience had not come into existence, the dimension of experience would have remained that of the plant. And without the plant, existence would be purely elemental, and so on, back to the ultimate source or beginning. So she seems to be saying that as you kind of go backwards through the chain of evolution, it's almost like there's a reduction in the experience of existence. You know, humans have a broader experience of existence, maybe, than animals. And animals have a broader experience of existence, maybe, than plants. And plants have a broader experience of existence than the elements. Right? So, and of course, as you go forward, this is why we call it evolution. As you go forward, the sense of existence evolves. She says the point is that consciousness, or the human experience, is only one dimension or level of existence, and this dimension is our unique human way of knowing, feeling, and experiencing. So only a human knows what it's like to be human. The true nature of self, again, the little s self, is consciousness. The study of self, therefore, is equally the study of consciousness. So again, she's saying our sense of self, or even more distinctly, our sense of existing. When I am self-referencing everything to me, it's because I have this central sense of existence. Like I'm the center of the world, right? I have this central sense of existence. And that central sense of existence is consciousness. Consciousness is that subject, that centrality, right? And so the study of this sense of self is also the study of consciousness. She says, as everyone's most immediate knowing, and the most immediate knowing is that sense that I exist, as everyone's most immediate knowing, self or consciousness is first of all an experience, and only secondarily a word or an idea that expresses this experience. So, you know, the word consciousness, the word self, the words I am, the words I exist, you know, she's saying those are merely words. Of course, the actual sense of self is that feeling of this I that exists. It's that feeling of being this subject that's aware of everything, right? I am the subject that's aware of the object. For me, you are an object. And for you, I am an object. But what each of us have is this sense of subject, this sense that I exist, this sense that I am conscious. That experience is the sense of self. She says it is solely by experience that we know self or consciousness. In these pages, we use the term consciousness or awareness, so she uses them synonymously in this particular book, In these pages, we use the term consciousness or awareness to include the entire system of consciousness with its various levels of experience from the unconscious to God consciousness. So the unconscious would be that sense of self that we are not aware of, that we cannot define, that we would not write down on a piece of paper if we were describing, answering the question, how do you know that you exist? Because we're not conscious of that. All the way to God consciousness, which is the unitive experience. So every part of this sense of self that a human can have, the ignorant human, completely ignorant of truth, the one who is awakening, and the one who is awake to God consciousness, all of that is included in this book in the word consciousness. So there's something here, you know, that the tamasic person has, the rahasic person has, and the sattvic person has, which is the same. And that is the thing called consciousness, right? She says, in Jungian terms, it includes both the conscious ego and the unconscious self, or the unconscious sense of self. To realize an abiding oneness with the divine is the highest potential of self or consciousness. And we saw this in the interview with Dr. Jeffrey Martin, because he said that his locations 1, 2, and 3 on his enlightenment continuum, which he called fundamental well-being, his locations 1, 2, and 3, he referred to as humans with fundamental well-being, and 3 was what he called the unitive experience, and he said 3 was the highest experience for a human. He said the people who are awake to location 4 and beyond were no longer human, which, going with what Bernadette Roberts is saying here, they would no longer have that sense of self that is unique to humans, that sense of self that's being called consciousness. In other words, location 4 and above are awakening beyond consciousness, beyond the second principle of God. But Dr. Jeffrey Martin's locations 1, 2, and 3 are still within consciousness, no higher than the second principle of God, right? And again, that consciousness, which gives us the sense of self as a human, the highest experience we can have and still have that sense of self as a human is the unitive experience. To realize an abiding oneness with the divine is the highest potential of self or consciousness. In this case, the deepest experience of self is the experience of the divine. But this realization or awareness is not outside the boundaries of self or consciousness. I'm continuing in the book. I'm on page 5 now. On the top of the page it says consciousness and the senses. Although we say that man is unique by reason of consciousness and not by reason of senses, which belong to the animals as well, the problem with excluding the senses from man's unique way of knowing is that as long as consciousness remains, man never experiences pure sensory perception. So what she is saying here is, as long as we have this sense of self that keeps us central as the subject to our experience, what we are experiencing through our senses is also being experienced through this central sense of self. Therefore, you could say that it's being interpreted. It's being understood through this sense of me as central to my experience. As a result, man or human never experience what she is calling pure sensory perception. This pure sensory perception that she's talking about isn't experienced until awakening to the absolute. Dr. Jeffrey Martin's Location 4 or above, to the first principle of God, awakening beyond consciousness. Until we awaken beyond consciousness, our senses are deceptive. She says, this is because these two systems, consciousness and the senses, are intimately connected and function as a unit or a singular whole. She goes on to say that animals are not conscious beings frequently raises objections. These objections, however, are based on the fact that consciousness is incapable of experiencing pure sensory perception, which is knowing without consciousness. So this sense of self that we have, where I am central to my experience, she's saying the animals don't have that. She's saying our dogs don't have that. And she says, you know, that, you know, people frequently object to that, and I can see why, because it certainly seemed to me that my dog was the center of her experience. You know, she wanted treats, she wanted walks, she was central to her experience. It seemed that she had consciousness, just as I had consciousness, although she had a different thinking mind, the same consciousness. But the truth is, my imagination of my dog's experience is based on my experience, my sense of consciousness, my centrality to my experience. There was an assumption there that the dog's consciousness was the same as my consciousness. You know, I actually said earlier, because of my sense of self, my sense of centrality and experience, I don't know the animal's experience. And in fact, she said that my consciousness keeps me from knowing these other dimensions of experience. She says, for the most part, it rarely occurs to anyone that the human sensory system can function without consciousness. Usually people believe it is the other way around, namely that consciousness can function without the senses. So, and I know I've even used this as an exercise before. We have this sense that if you take away my seeing, my hearing, even if you could take away my touching, my smelling, my tasting, I would still have this sense of me. And I think I would, because that is consciousness. If you take away seeing, take away hearing, take away smelling, tasting, tasting, and touching, no senses at all, there's still a sense of me. And that's consciousness. And we see that consciousness as being primary to what we are, which it is as a human. But what she is saying is that the senses, and therefore the body, can operate without consciousness, without this sense of me, without this sense of I exist, without this sense of I am. And this is the same thing that we saw Ramana Maharshi say near the end of his book, The Spiritual Teaching of Ramana Maharshi, which we looked at earlier in The Guiding Light. He referred to his experience as being like sleepwalking, which means the body was moving about, the senses were active, but there was no sense of I, no subject there. She says, for the most part, it rarely occurs to anyone that the human sensory system can function without consciousness. Usually people believe it is the other way around, namely that consciousness can function without the senses. Man, like the animal, can function without consciousness. Because remember, she's telling us the animals don't have this sense of consciousness, this central sense of I am the subject, and interpreting the world through that central sense of I exist. She says, man, like the animal, can function without consciousness, but neither man nor animal can function without the senses. But we certainly know that our dogs use their senses. We've seen them sniffing, right? We can see that they hear. But what she is saying is they have a pure sensory perception experience, which is not muddled or diluted by consciousness and its misinterpretations. And what this reminds me of is I heard a story, you know, several years ago there was this huge tidal wave. I think it was in Thailand. It killed a lot of people. But I heard a story on the news during that time that there was this little girl riding an elephant, and it was a baby elephant, and she was a tourist, and you know the caretaker of the elephant was walking along, kind of holding the elephant on a leash. So this is something that she paid to do, or her parents paid for her to do. I think the girl was around 10, and she was riding on this elephant on the beach when the baby elephant kept trying to run away from the caretaker. You know, and the caretaker would pull the elephant back and he would try to run away again. This is long before any human knew that there was a tidal wave coming. And eventually this elephant, this baby elephant, became so desperate that it broke away from its caretaker and it ran off to a high hill. And then the tidal wave came. And of course everyone in the lower areas were killed, but this girl and the baby elephant survived because the baby elephant ran to the high hill. So this knowing that this baby elephant had that the humans did not have, what if it was consciousness, this interpreting everything through this centrality of me, which really kind of blinds us to other things that we might know? What if that's what kept the humans from knowing the tidal wave was coming? But the animals, without being blinded by consciousness, were able to sense it and get to safety in plenty of time. You know, what if this sense of me, this sense I exist, this sense of centrality, I mean, it even feels like self-importance right now, is blinding me. I think I'll just end there, and we'll begin there again next week. In fact, let me read this last sentence. The senses have their own way of knowing and partake of a dimension of existence that is not available to consciousness. Isn't that, you know, maybe what the elephant seemed to demonstrate? That its senses had its own way of knowing and that it could partake of a dimension of existence and understand what was occurring, one that wasn't available to consciousness or to the humans. Yeah. All right, that's it. I'm letting this go, and I look forward to continuing with this next week. Bye.